So we have on our agenda for today the brief third aliyah of Tezriah, and also the much longer Parshas HaChodesh. And to say really a few words first about Tezriah and Metzorah as a whole. And there's a lot to say about that, perhaps more than there is to say about the aliyah itself, although there is what we can comment about that too. And we spoke about it a little bit in the Beis Medrash this week, and I'm going to try not to repeat anything that we said specifically there, but just to call attention to some of what should be on our minds for the entire Parsha, that Parsha Tezriah and Parsha Metzorah as well is yet another category of what we've called attention to over these past few weeks about the value that is particular to learning parshios that deal with something that we don't experience in our contemporary lives. And there's a specific aspect to these parshios that's additional to what we've been talking about. And the whole notion of tzaras, which is something we think we're fortunate not to have to grapple with, and perhaps we are, but in another way, perhaps we aren't. So the whole notion of these very unpleasant sounding diseases, which are physical diseases, but it's clear that they are caused by spiritual failings. And the Gemara says they're actually a list. It's not just one thing. There are a number of different averos that are connected, but most prominent among them is Lashon Hara. Chazal tell us that Metzorah is a contraction for the words Motzi Shem Ra. And as we did speak about in the Beis Medrash, that as much as there are various Gemaras that highlight this and other averos, but it really is explicit in Psukim, in Parshas Balosra, that Miriam contracts Zaras as a consequence of Lashon Hara. And that becomes highly significant, because the idea that there is that direct connection drawn between Tzaras and Lashon Hara, and that these parshios tell us so much about the details of Tzaras, and the fact that there is a mitzvah, Minat Torah, to remember the episode of Miriam, and the Ramban says that that is a real mitzvah, that's one of the 613 mitzvos, and the purpose of that mitzvah, according to the Ramban, is to help keep us away from Lashon Hara. And according to some, that's actually the mitzvah of not speaking Lashon Hara. According to others, the language that's also there of Hishomer B'nega HaTzaras, that we have to take steps to avoid Tzaras. How do we take steps to avoid Tzaras? By avoiding Lashon Hara. So that linkage is not just philosophical, it's not just a Musar point, but there's a halachic message that is being directed towards us. Perhaps it's a little bit similar to what we were talking about earlier in the week about Kofen al Midas Dom, that we have to actually derive not only a Musar message, but a very specific halachic lesson from understanding what's going on with Dom, and there are actually very specific halachic derivations that come out of it. So to hear the message of Tzaras may even have very specific contemporary halachic applications, if we understand that Hishamer B'nega HaTzaras is telling us, pay close attention to what the Torah is telling us about Tzaras, that even if we don't encounter Tzaras today, but the messages of Tzaras actually may have contemporary applications, telling us to avoid the behavior that the Torah tells us could lead to Tzaras. So that becomes very significant. And the fact that we don't encounter it today actually has a drawback, because just to imagine what it would mean to get that kind of direct feedback, especially before things get worse. We know that Lashon Hara has such terrible, devastating consequences on relationships, on societies, and Chazal have so much to say about Lashon Hara. We all have so much to say in the Lashon Hara variety, but Chazal have so much to say about the harm of Lashon Hara, and it's literally blamed for everything from the very beginning of history, Ad Yom Hazeh. It's the cause of all of the problems. It's really associated with every single piece of suffering that Klal Yisrael has had throughout its history. So imagine if we had this kind of immediate feedback. Imagine if there was a system that would tell us that as soon as we started to get off track, we would see some kind of physical indication that there's something off about how we're communicating, and that the harm that we are inflicting on people would actually represent itself somehow in a physically visible way. That would be, and it would represent itself on us in a physically visible way. That would be a very powerful thing. And maybe we should feel bad that we don't get that. And we should mourn that that's not there, because who knows what that could save us from, especially because Lashon Hara often has a delayed impact, because that is something we spoke about in the Beis Medrash this week. Often it does this damage much later. So if we could get that feedback sooner and we could course correct, that's something that we could gain a lot from. I believe the Chafetz Chaim writes that the reason it disappeared is because the purpose of Tzaraas was to get better from it. It wasn't just that we should suffer, it was so that we should go through the Tara process, so that we should be able to learn the lesson and then course correct. So if we couldn't have everything that came with it, with the Kohen and the Tara process, so then there wouldn't be a point. But that's ultimately what it's there for. So we lose out a lot on not having it. And just to think about what we could have gained from having that kind of visual feedback, and what that represents. So reading these psukim, to maybe try, they're very unpleasant. The descriptions are very evocative of something that really makes you feel, ugh. You know, imagine if you really had to go through that. And that's perhaps what it's supposed to do. And imagine what that would do for us in terms of making us really try to make real that feeling of the power of sin, and to have a Toru Mada moment here. You know, Oscar Wilde wrote a novel called The Picture of Dorian Gray, which the whole point was, it was a man who had a very degenerate lifestyle, and he was able to have a painting absorb all of the consequences of everything he did in his life, so that he was able to stay eternally unaffected by it, and the painting bore all the consequences. And of course, to a large extent, sin doesn't necessarily represent itself physically, it represents itself spiritually. But even to whatever extent there is a physical impact, he was able to totally shuffle that off onto the painting and to keep it completely out of sight and out of mind. And that was leave a mushel for that point. And the notion is that the more one is not confronted with the consequences of his actions, the more one totally runs rampant with whatever their inclinations are. And that's not helpful, and that's not a path to success. And the opposite would be something that would be very beneficial, and that's one of the major messages of these parshios. So essentially, here we have 2 weeks of this because of the leap year and because the fact these parshiyos are not combined. So it's not a pleasant 2 weeks. It's easier Shnayim Mikra to have it spread out over 2 weeks. Easier for the Bali Kriya to not have to learn them both for one Shabbos. But it gives us 2 weeks to think about these themes. And thinking about it is what we need to do. And
How would Rebbe, jive the importance of, as we said, the sort of being, you know, the value of having like a physical sign of when you sin that Hashem's telling you that you're doing something wrong, with, you know, the idea that sort of like, you know, you can't necessarily ascribe, let's say, you know, oh, this specific Avera caused this specific action. As in, because there are people go around and say like, oh, because people did this Avera, therefore this happened. But
so it's actually can be relevant to my next point, so maybe hold the question for a second. But, well, we'll segue from one to the other, but the major difference is that Chazal very much do tell you to introspect about these things, but where it goes wrong is that it's when it's kind of outwardly directed, and that's where a lot of the problems develop. But we are supposed to try to look inwardly and try to find where we go off track. And it's true that we can't necessarily be sure we're getting the right answers, but it's always a valuable process when we're trying. And that we are very much directed to do, to try to look inward when we're trying to figure out what other people's problems are. And that's usually the first instinct. So that's where things tend to become very problematic. And that segues into the next general point I want to mention about these parshiyos as a whole. And there's a kind of a double Chassidish vort, two levels of Chassidish interpretation on the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Negayim writes that Kol Negayim Adam Roa Chus Negei Atzma. So the Chassidish interpretation, maybe it's attributed to the Baal Shem Tov, or the next one's attributed to the Baal Shem Tov, I don't remember. But so it's talking really about the Kohen, that the Kohen is able to evaluate the Negayim of other people, but he's not able to evaluate his own Negayim. But the interpretation here is that a person is able, call Negayim Adim Roa, a person is able to see the flaws in somebody else, but he can't see his own flaws. That's just the nature of human people. They're able to see other people's negayim, they're able to see other people's blemishes, but they can't see their own. So it's like the Hasidic interpretation called negayim adam roa chutz minigei atzmo. But there's another level of Hasidic interpretation on top of that one. It puts the punctuation differently. And it says, kol negayim adam roa chutz minigei atzmo. That whatever negayim people see on the outside, they're really from himself. In other words, this refers to the mita of projection, that what people see on others is really coming from his own internal problems. And that has a lot of truth to it as well. So both interpretations are not shot in the Mishnah, but they both reflect human realities, that we have a tendency to be blind to our own problems, but we're very quick to see them in others. And maybe we see them in others when they're not even true about others and they're only true about us. So that is a basic human problem. But I think we shouldn't make more of it than it is, and I think maybe we should actually make use of it. And that's a part of the message of the Parsha. So I think this is what is often maybe mislabeled hypocrisy. And hypocrisy is a very often used accusation. I think it's a very overused accusation, because we all have this tendency, and hypocrisy is considered one of the worst things a person can have. To be a hypocrite is one of the worst things a person can be. And yet, it's used to describe a basic human tendency that we're all guilty of. So there are many things that are called hypocrisy, I think, unfairly. And sometimes it's just very often people are called hypocrites just because they disagree with you. So that, for sure, is not a fair accusation. Other times, people are called hypocrites because they have standards that are higher than where they're at right now. And that also, I think, is unfair, because if your standards are not higher than where you're at right now, then your standards are too low. You're alive because you should have higher standards than where you're at right now. You're supposed to have higher standards than where you're at. You're supposed to aspire to more. That's why you have more life to live, so that you can grow. So the notion that a person is a hypocrite for having values that they have not yet lived up to, adarabba, that's the point. So the whole accusation of hypocrisy for people having standards that are beyond them at the moment, adarabba, that's the point. What real hypocrisy is, a person is a complete phony, a person represents themselves as something that they don't even believe in, and they don't even care about. So that's what real hypocrisy is. But to have a standard that's aspirational, that's appropriate. But sometimes people use the accusation hypocrisy for inconsistency, for accusing others of things that they themselves are guilty of. So yes, that's an imperfection, but we're all guilty of that. That's basic human frailty. So like the statement reflects, kol negayim adam roa chutz minegay atzmo, it's basic human nature to be able to recognize other people's problems and not to notice that they are present in themselves. That's basic human nature. And it's something that we can make use of. Sometimes it's a good muster tool, so that when a person does recognize that somebody else has this problem, sometimes that can be turned back on them, and you can say, well, the same way you notice that that person has this issue, maybe you see that it's something you can work on as well. And also the second Hasidic interpretation, that the idea of kol negay sh'adam ro'a v'chutz negay atzma, that it's a projection, that's not, maybe not even present in the other person, but it's a reflection of one's own internal issues. So recognizing that tendency actually becomes an opportunity to redirect it inward. So I don't think we should necessarily take this human tendency and consider it to be the worst flaw imaginable and label everybody terrible hypocrites who don't deserve to exist, but instead say, okay, recognize that this is a problem we all have, that we're much more aware of other people's flaws than we are of our own, and sometimes we even are very quick to judge others with issues that actually may inhere within ourselves. And the quicker we are to recognize that this is a basic human tendency, the more likely we are to be responsive to it and to correct it. And that's also one of the messages of our parsha, to be introspective and to reflect upon that. And if we are able to be sensitive to that and to be open to that, then we have much greater potential. And especially in a door where we're not getting the feedback that we need, so we have to provide it ourselves. And we have to be responsive to that in and of ourselves and to be able to look for that. So that's one of the obligations that now impose itself upon us to bring to the table, especially in a door where we don't have tzaras, we don't have these negayim, and we have to supply the sensitivity ourselves. So with that as a kind of general introduction to these parashiyos, just to say a few words about some of the psukim here. We won't go word for word, but just make a few notes about the content of this shlishi. So just to look first at the first pasuk of shlishi. So it talks about uvasar kievo b'oro shchin v'nirpa. So what are we talking about here? So this shchin, so this isn't one of the negayim, this is the context where a nega may show up. The word shchin, of course, is familiar from Pesach, from the Makos, and that's essentially what it is, some kind of inflammation. Rashi quotes from the Gemara Nechulin on Dav Ches, that basically Rashi quotes her lashon chimo, shenischamim habasar belikoi habalo machmas maka shloi machmas, or this Gemara Nechulin, that let's say somebody got hit, so there's some kind of inflammation on the skin, so it became red because of that. V'nirpa hashchin hela rucha mukom hela nega acher. So there was some kind of injury here on the skin, and it started to heal. It didn't heal completely, then there wouldn't be much relevance here, but you had some kind of previous injury, and as it started to heal, so then a nega came up in that context. And the Alter of Kelm comments on the whole relevance of this context, in which he points out that here, especially if we are pondering spiritual messages here, so this guy already got hit in some other way. So in general, like we were saying in response to the previous question, so whatever happens, you're supposed to be mefashbeis b'masecha, you're supposed to wonder, okay, what can I learn from the spiritual messages that come from my experiences? So here, apparently, this guy already encountered some kind of injury, and he still hasn't really course-corrected. So now, on top of that, some saras has come in the context of a previous injury. So the Torah is describing that kind of situation, that here this person is now on level 2 of getting a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the language of Ubasar, so why does it use that word specifically? So the Torah Tamima notes that it uses that word because of the relationship with Shchin, with that word itself, because nega is specifically applicable to a person, But Shchin happens to Behemos as well, so he uses the word Basar. But the Gemara, Masechta Sota, on the Fayim Aleph, has an interpretation here that a tefillah is not heard unless a person makes his heart like Basar. And the Torah Tumima comments on that, that it has to be soft and it has to be modest. And that's what makes it closer, makes his heart closer to be able to have spiritual wounds healed. Again, that's the whole point of what's happening. A person has to be receptive. So if you want that to be the case, so then you have to make your heart soft like Basar. And that represents this notion of modesty, reflects, again, our whole goal here, that if we want this to be a process of Musar, Musar is only going to happen if there's going to be modesty. And this is reflective as well of something that you see in a few places in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim, it's fascinating. So if you read the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, so many people have the impression that the Chafetz Chaim wasn't living in the real world, that he was on a madriga that just couldn't relate to normal mortal humans. And certainly it seems very demanding, but very often you see reflections of the fact that he understood normal humans better than we give him credit for. And one of the things that he addresses there is that he talks about what you should do if you find yourself in a context where people are speaking Lashon Hara. And you can't leave, you can leave, how should you do it? And he discusses there whether you should try to object, whether you should tell them to stop speaking Lashon Hara. And a part of the problem is, which he recognizes because he does understand people, that if you tell people they're speaking Lashon Hara and you tell them to stop, so human nature is to get very defensive about this. And most people, when you tell them they're speaking Lashon Hara, so they're not going to want to acknowledge, oh, you're right, I shouldn't say that. So I'll assume that they're going to get embarrassed and they're going to try to defend it. So they'll double down. And they'll say, oh, it must be Latoella somehow. So if you're going to tell me, oh, I shouldn't say this, I'll tell you why I have to say this. I have to tell you why, in fact, I should say it more. And they're going to further entrench, and it's just going to get worse. So one place in the Sefer, the Chafetz Chaim acknowledges that risk, that if you try to object to the people speaking Lashon Hara, then there's a good chance it's going to backfire, and they're going to end up speaking more Lashon Hara because of the defensive reaction. Another place, so he discusses why, he has a statement which is surprisingly controversial. You wouldn't think this would be so controversial because nowadays when we give Musar, so very often, so we say something is a Chil Hashem, it doesn't sound so controversial to call any given Avera a Chil Hashem. But the Chafetz Chaim, when he lists the many different Averas you can violate when you speak Lashon Hara, so he calls Lashon Hara a Chil Hashem, that was actually controversial. Chazon Ish thought that Lashon Hara was no more of a Chil Hashem than any other Avera. So why is Lashon Hara a Chil Hashem specifically? So in different places, he explains different ways why it's a Chil Hashem in a particular way, more than any Avera in a specific sense. So one of the reasons he says that Lashon Hara is specifically a Chil Hashem is because it's the kind of Avera that when you object, it just gets worse. So this is a part of that same idea that it tends to increase within itself. So a person, to really respond properly to a Musar experience, needs to be humble. So, especially if we understand that this parsha really is about our response specifically to Lashon Hara, the idea that the heart has to be like Basar, has to be soft in order for it to be responsive. So that's what the Torah Tumim is reflecting here, this language of Basar in the Pasuk is perhaps consistent with that. We'll just also make reference to another point that's reflective of some of the language in the rest of the Aliyah here, that there is a discussion in the Sefer Chavetel Sasharim, which is a nice Sefer al-Hatorah, which talks about a lot of Lamdusha and Yanim on Chumash, very very extensive svarim on all the parshas of the Torah. So he notes specifically on the psukim on this aliyah that he says it's had a long-standing chakira about the nature of Riyas Negayim, about the idea that the Kohanim look at the Negayim and they paskin on them. So what kind of a psak is that? So is that a psak on the Nega, or is that a psak on the individual? Basically, is that on the Chafza, or is it on the Gabra? Is it on the Tsaras itself, or is it on the person? And he suggests that it sounds like, from the Psukim, that it's on the Tsaras, that it's on the person, rather, that because the Tsaras here, the different types of afflictions are basically described here, B'lashon Nekeva, but all of the references to the Re'iyah are referred to B'lashon Zachar, that he is brought before the Kohen Paskins on him. So therefore, it sounds like it's basically a din in the Gavra, that the Gavra is ruled upon. And that seems to be the case. And then he considers whether that should also be true when it comes to Negoi Batim or Negoi Begadim, that thinks Misfara, you would have said differently, that there it would seem the psak is on the blemish, not on the whole house or on the whole garment. Although from the Mishnayos, it thinks it sounds differently, that it is a din in the garment. So one would think, he doesn't necessarily take it in this direction, but one would think that, especially if we understand that this is about really influencing the individual, that it makes sense that essentially it's a psak on the individual, that it's not really about evaluating the blemish, it's about the impact and the effect that it has on the person. So this is really a means to an end, so it's about what does it say about the individual. You know, contemporary medicine, so they say that one of the mindsets that they want contemporary doctors to have is that they should treat the person, not the disease. That they should see the individual holistically and not in a compartmentalized way, looking at the disease, or look at the individual as a whole. So it's just interesting here to see that in the context of the chakira that he's discussing. Should you look at the gavra or look at the saras itself? But especially it makes sense that if we understand that the Torah is telling us we're not necessarily interested in the saras in of itself, it's not a din in that, but it's a din in the individual, because it reflects his spiritual status, so that certainly makes sense. And it also makes sense that it would be different when considering a house or a garment, because the house or the garment doesn't have a spiritual status. It's reflective of its owner. So there, it shouldn't necessarily extend to the entire garment of the house. It should reflect its owner, even though there he suggests that the Mishnayos do represent, to reflect something about its status vis-a-vis the whole chatzin itself. So again, a lot to ponder from these parashios, and hopefully we shouldn't have to deal with either the Avera or its consequences, the consequences of Ben Adam L'Chaver or Ben Adam L'Makom, but be able to ponder what the messages are so that we should internalize them, and that they should be able to have their desired effect, and that we shouldn't have to deal with the consequences like we spoke about. The Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Erchin that the whole quarantining, which is another way, over these past 2 years, we also have seen too much of different intermediaries for conveying the message of this parsha. That the whole idea of people being separated from each other, which we've had to encounter in too many painful ways, both long-standing and transient, to allow us to really ponder the themes of these parshiyos. We shouldn't have to do that anymore, and we should be able to go right to the positive results of these messages. So just to say a few words about Parshas HaChodesh. So Parshas HaChodesh, of course, is the last of the Dalet parshiyos. And even when they are spread out a little bit, like they are this year, but there's always a link between Parshas Parah and Parshas Chodesh, and really a link between all four they really do form a unit. There's a beautiful sefer, there's a number of beautiful sefarim. There's a mechaber by Reuven Schwartz, who I have never met in person, but I have met various relatives of his who have told me that they have heard or seen that I have quoted his sefarim. So in case they hear this recording, should know again that I am quoting the sefarim by Reuven Schwartz. It gets a couple of references really for today, because he's written a number of beautiful sefarim. Many of his sefarim are on Zerayim and Shvius, so in general for a Shemitah year, should have extra references, but also for today, because the sefarim that I'm aware of that are not about Zerayim, he has a beautiful sefer on Lashon Hara, so that's good for Tezriya and Metzorah, and he also has a very nice sefer called Zmane Ruvain on Moed, but as far as I can tell, the entire sefer is actually on the Dalet Parshios. So for this weekend, is the Sfarim of Reuven Schwartz are particularly highlighted for Tezriya and Chodesh. And Sefer Zmane Reuven is basically a lot of the Sefer is all about a thesis that the Dalet Parshios really create one unit, and that they are all expressions of a theme of Adar, that they're all basically extensions of Adar, even though they a little bit overflow a little bit before Adar begins and a little bit after Adar ends, but they all make the theme of Adar, Shenichnas Adar Mar B'Simcha, and the Simcha of Adar, I think we spoke about it a little bit at the beginning, of Adar's aspect of giving and of caring of others, which we've also had the opportunity to be learning the Sugyas of Staka over the course of a lot of the month of Adar, so we've had a particular ability to be Mekayim, that notion of Marvin B'Simcha, and the learning of these themes over the course of that time. So it's a particular kiyum, but I would highly recommend, if you have access to the Sefer, to take a look at some of that. And so the notion of now we're reading Parshas HaChodesh into Rosh Chodesh Nisan is a way of linking Adar and Nisan. And we know that that's very much a theme as well, that connect the Nisim of Adar and Nisan, which are connected through that idea, the redemptions and the miracle, and like we discussed, also the Chesed themes of Adar and Nisan very much have to remain connected, and that's a topic that we've spent some time on, and specifically is emphasized this year when we have two Adars to choose from. So the idea that Purim and Nisan have to remain connected, and that's why we keep the observances of Purim and Adar Sheni, making that something which is particularly emphasized in order to make that point. But also make note that the notion that there is a particular linkage between the Dalet Parshios was also suggested by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who thought that the Dalet Parshios reflect an idea that was expressed by Yirmiyahu HaNavi in two psukim that are very well known, very often quoted, some of the very memorable words of Yirmiyahu HaNavi from Parak Tes, which also connect to themes that we've spoken about. But Parak Tes, Pasuk Chaf Beis and Chaf Gimel of Yirmiyahu, where it is stated, Ko Amar Hashem, Al Yisalel Chacham B'Chachmaso, V'Al Yisalel HaGibor B'Gvoraso, Al Yisalel Asher B'Ashro. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the Chacham should not take pride in his Chachma, V'al Yisalel HaGibor B'Gvoraso, he should not take pride in his great strength, nor should he take great pride in his wealth. So that is not the source of pride in the world. So what does that refer to, or how do we make that point, said Rav Aaron? Says those were the first three of the Dalet Parshios. How do we know that you shouldn't take pride in your wisdom? Well, that's what we saw last week. We read Parshas Para, which even Shlomo HaMelech is not able to understand. Even the wisest of men could not understand the Para Aduma. That's to emphasize that that's not what we're here to be proud of, that we're so smart we can't even figure out the Para Aduma. Val Yisalel HaGibor B'Gvuraso, so the warrior shouldn't be so proud of his strength. Amalek was able to attack us, and we needed the Kadosh Baruch Hu to help us out, and it was only when Moshe's arms were pointed towards Shemayim and we were remembering of God that we were able to survive. So That was the only way that we were able to make it through, so we should not take pride in our riches. Al yisalel asher ba'ashro, and we shouldn't take pride in our wealth. Our wealth, as we've been discussing, is here so that we can help others, so that we can be a part of the greater Tzibor. And we read Parsha Shkalim to remind us of that, that our wealth is not ours alone. It's here because we have a mission and we have a purpose. So the Dalet Parshios, the first three Parshios that we read, all emphasize the themes of that pasuk. So what's the next pasuk? The next pasuk comes to tell us what we should take pride in. Ki im bezos yisalel hamisalel. This is what we should really take pride in. Haskel v'yadoa osi ki ani Hashem osa chesed mishpat yitzdaka v'aretz ki be'ela chafatzti v'im Hashem. This is what a person should take pride in. He should know God. What is God? Right? What have we been learning about the past few weeks? Osa chesed mishpat yitzdaka. One who does chesed mishpat yitzdaka v'aretz. This is what I want. This is what I ask for from the descendants of Avraham Avinu. And this is what you should know. So we read this week the Parasha Sachodesh, which is the first of the mitzvos, which is our inauguration as a nation, which begins our history as the Am Hashem. And that's what we really should take pride in. So everything else is important. Everything else is important as a tool. Everything else gives us the ability to function in this world. It's good to have chachma. It's good to have gvura. It's good to have financial resources. But none of that is something that we should take pride in or brag about or think that that's the be-all and end-all. All of those are means to an end. But ultimately, it was all leading to a goal, and that goal is the Adias Hashem, who has a mission for us, that we should be doing chesed and tzedakah in this world in his name. And that's the theme of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. So the idea of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem as the first mitzvah is that theme of time, and the idea that we should be taking on time. And Varon also pointed out, Ryan Soloveitchik, that when we bring up the whole notion of the Kiddush HaChodesh and we bring in the new month, so we talk about time in terms of Chalakim, which is a very, very small period of time. It's a portion of a second. While the world in general, we count time in terms of minutes usually. So minutes is a bigger period of time. So it just shows how much we value time in such a tiny increments, but in general, the recognition that time is such a precious resource and that it's something that we have to cherish and hold on to with such reverence and with such appreciation is the earliest message that we receive as a nation, and it is a fundamental reorientation of our perspective. And as we transition from Avdus to Chayrus, that becomes one of the fundamental paradigm shifts. And in Eved, you know, is Pater from Mitzvah Saseh Shaz Managrama. It's a completely different concept than the Ptur of Anisha from Mitzvah Saseh Shaz Managrama. It reflects the fact that an Eved has no ability to create his own schedule. And that when it comes to becoming an Eved Lashem, so you now have the freedom to create responsibility for time. And you find, last year we learned Maseches Pesachim, and we saw this to be one of the major themes in Pesachim, that notions of Zerizin Makdim in the Mitzvos, and Chaviv and Mitzvah B'Shaito, and Emachmitzin Ala Mitzvos, Emachmitzin Ala Mitzvos, the themes of protecting time and not allowing time to get away from you, and all of the different hidurim and zahiruses that we have about time seem to dominate and seem to be a constant ongoing theme throughout Maseches Pesachim and some of the mitzvos related to Pesach. And of course the whole difference between chametz and matzah that is so fundamental to Pesach and so much at the core of everything that we do on Pesach is about protecting time. And even though we don't actually have the ability to conquer time. It's symbolic, in a sense, and we show that this is something that we can, at least to the extent of our abilities, take control over. So that initial statement of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem is making the dividing line between Avdus L'Chairus and saying that we are going to, at least symbolically, assert our recognition over the importance of time and the ability to set an agenda for ourselves. And this is true as an individual in general, but especially in the modern era, it's challenging when there's so much that is competing for our time. And as college students, as smicha students, and as people in the modern world where there's so much competing for our attention, and the world of technology and 24/7 alerts and everything coming at us all the time. So the ability to recognize that we have to take control of the situation and set our own schedule and decide that we are going to be masters of the time and to say HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, it's not a simple thing, but to whatever extent we can do that and we can internalize the message of Parshas HaChodesh, so the closer we are to the Cheres that Pesach is meant to symbolize. So it doesn't mean not having a lot to do, because if anything, Pesach certainly is very far from that, but it means a certain kind of mindset and a certain kind of reality. So we have a lot to take in from Parshas Tezriah and Parshas HaChodesh together, and hopefully we can utilize these opportunities to create a very energized mindset, and hopefully we'll be able to do that. And of course, it creates also renewal. That's what Chadash also conveys to us. We should be able to take all those messages and be inspired by it so that we should come renewed. I look forward to seeing you on Sunday with that mentality of renewal so that we can continue to plow forward. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos. And a Chodesh Tov, yes. And